Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Judiciary Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, April 19th. Let the record reflect, it is 4:08 p.m. Today we have present Representative Johnson, Representative Carpenter, Representative Eastman, Representative Gray, and myself, Chair Vance. I'd like to remind the committee members and those in the audience to please silence your cell phones. The staff assisting us today is Sophia Tenney with House Records and Talia Ames, the Juna LAO. Thank you for your patience with us today. On today's agenda, the committee will hear House Bill 68, Crime of Sex and Human Trafficking, from the governor as presented by the Criminal Division of the Alaska Department of Law in its fifth, sixth hearing. We have four amendments before the committee today in the current version V.S that we adopted in our last meeting. Representative Carpenter, would you
Madam Chair, I move Amendment Number 1, Work Order 33-GH1029/S1.
I'll object for discussion.
Thank you. I would like to invite to the table Casey Schroeder from the Department of Law, who's going to walk us through the changes and needs for these amendments. Please state your name for the record, and thank you so much for your patience with us in the delay of the meeting today.
No problem. For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division at the Department of Law. S.1 makes a number of technical changes and corrects some drafting issues. So I will walk the committee through what it does in order. First, on page 1 of the amendment, lines 1 through 18 are all related to the same change, which is cleaning up a cross-reference error that is found on page 8. Page 8, line 23, says evidence supporting the prosecution under A1 of this section. And that needs to go away because that's reference to what's in current law, and this statute has been restructured. So the cross-reference doesn't make any sense because if you look, there is no A1. So what is happening is that the drafter has moved the restriction on prosecution into prostitution in the fourth degree. So basically just moved that language up into prostitution in the fourth degree and made conforming adjustments from there. The next change is on page 1 of the amendment, lines 20 to 23, through page 2 of the amendment, line 21. What is happening there is on page 11, amended 1181-900, which is the general definition section for Title 11 in its entirety. However, because of the changes that were made and moving place of prostitution into 1166, we've moved that back into 1166. We've created a new prostitution series. Those definitions apply to only those terms. So because they don't appear anywhere else in Title 11, those definitions now appear in 1166 in the definition section of 1166, rather than the definition section for the entire title. So that's what's happening with that change.
Briefities. Back on record. Ms. Schroeder, please continue.
The next change is on page 2 of the amendment, lines 22 to 26, and that is amending page 21, in essence, to make the definition of sex offense match the definition that is on the previous page in section 30. So we want the definitions of sex offense to be the same, and so we're adding this language there to make the definitions the same. The next change is on page 2 of the amendment, lines 27 through 30. This is cleaning up the repealer section. So because we are keeping the definition section in 1166 now, because we have a new series of prostitution offenses, we are not repealing the entire definition section, just the definitions that no longer apply. So that's what's happening there. And then Page 2 of the amendment, beginning on line 31, to page 3 of the amendment, lines 1 through 3, is amending the cross-references to the prostitution statutes, and this is relating to moving that restriction on prosecution up to prostitution in the fourth degree. So we got rid of a section there, and so the drafter is correcting a citation series there. Page 3 of the amendment, lines 4 through 8, is amending the applicability section to incorporate the definition sections for the prostitution series of offenses. So we need an applicability section for those definitions because we're moving them back. And then page 3 through the rest of the amendment are amending the section citations in the applicability section. So because we've gotten rid of a section, as I explained before, we have to adjust the citations for the sections there. And that is what the amendment is doing. Oh, sorry, one last one. On page 7 of the amendment, lines 20 through 23, it's amending page 34 and deleting material. That language relates to prior court records. It's unclear why that language was included in the CS. It's not needed. There's no legal reason. And so that language is being deleted.
Any questions from committee members on number one? Representative Gray.
Thank you. So on page 1 of the amendment, lines 4 through 6, when it says delete section 1166-108, persons exempt from prosecution, it's not, I just want to be clear, we're leaving in everything about what exempts them from prosecution. We're just taking out those words. So they're still exempt from prostitution.
Through the chair, Representative Gray, that is correct. We're just moving that language that exempts them from prosecution would be subsection B of prostitution in the fourth degree.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions on amendment number one? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. There was a lot of little things going on as you were walking through, and I didn't quite capture all the changes taking place. I'm just trying to figure out, of the substantive changes, you know, which trying to figure out which changes those are. And so the place of prostitution definition seems to be changing a bit. Is there a rationale for why that is changing, or could you offer a little bit more detail on that?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I know it looks like that the place of prostitution definition is being amended, and it is because we're amending what's in current law. However, this language in its entirety reflects how it appeared in the bill. So in order to keep that and amend the current law, it has the bolded and underlined there.
Mm-hmm.
Follow up.
And other than formatting changes, what are the substantive changes in this amendment?
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, I don't view any of these as substantive. I believe that these are all drafting cleanup changes.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions on amendment number one? Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, following up on Representative Eastman's questions about place of prostitution. So the other than a proprietor of the place, I know that we got some emails from some people. I just wanted to say, is this means that if somebody is a sex worker working out of their home? Is that what that's doing?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, that's correct. So if you are a sex worker and you are operating out of your apartment, then that would not technically qualify as a place of prostitution. If you have somebody else start to engage in that, now you're getting closer. However, if you are splitting the rent and you're not making money off of it, that still would not be a place of prostitution.
Any further questions on amendment number one? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And I understand that you're saying that it doesn't change from the bill, but I'm trying to understand how what you just said matches the language here in responding to Representative Gray's question. It looks from the language I'm seeing in section 14, where we're defining place of prostitution, that your apartment would be covered. Why are we saying your apartment isn't covered? It basically says any place. Any places, a lot of places. I think apartments seem to me to be included any place unless there's some kind of sideboard somewhere else in the bill or something like that.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, the language that is in the current CS says a place of prostitution means a place where a person other than the proprietor of the place engages in sexual conduct in return for a fee. This language says place of prostitution means any place where a person other than the a proprietor of the place engages in sexual conduct in return for a fee. So the person that owns the place is not going to be, it's not a place of prostitution if you own the place. Once you have other people start engaging in prostitution at that place, you're getting closer. But again, I gave the roommate example. And on page 2 of the amendment, line 3 through 4, that's the shared expenses language.
I get it. For the non-proprietors that are involved here, it seems to me like we're literally saying that a vehicle is a place of prostitution as long as someone other than the owner of the vehicle is engaging in the sexual conduct. Am I reading that right?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that is a situation that could happen. However, I want to be clear that if somebody loans their vehicle out to somebody and has no reason to expect that somebody's going to do that, that's not going to subject them to prosecution.
Thank you.
Any further questions on amendment number one? Representative Eastman, do you maintain your objection?
I will withdraw my objection.
Hearing no further objections, amendment number one has passed. I'd like to let the record reflect we've been joined by Representative Groh. We have just adopted amendment number one. Representative Carpenter.
Madam Chair, I move amendment number two, work order 33-GH1029/S2.
Jack, for discussion.
S.2 deletes the language on page 5, lines 12 through 16, that relate to corroboration of certain testimony. And if the chair may indulge me just a bit, I would point out to the committee that this is the only place in statute other than talking about corroboration in relation to accomplice testimony where this type of language appears. And just to give you a little bit of history, before 1972, there was a statute on the books that talked about, that was called Necessary Evidence for Prostitution and Seduction. And it related to injured females, and it said that corroborating testimony was needed in order to convict somebody of an offense of injured female. There was a case thereafter in 1972 which interpreted that statute. And that case said that corroboration of a sex worker's testimony needed to be harmonious with the sex worker's testimony in that there should not be deviation. And if that case was Johnson v. State, 501 P. 2nd, 762, and that case is from 1972. And I will just read you some passages from that case. The early articulations of reasons for requiring corroboration were couched in terms of protecting male defendants from untruthful accusations of unchaste and immoral women. Complainants have been known to have fantasized sexual attacks and then to have described the surrounding circumstances so convincingly that one might conclude that they themselves believed their own testimony. The testimony of accomplices, like that of injured females, must be corroborated in order to support a conviction. The inherent distrust which attaches to accomplice testimony is very similar to that which attaches to the testimony of injured females. Either type of testimony may be motivated by blackmail, malice, or an abnormal psychological condition. We therefore conclude that the proper standard by which to determine if there was adequate corroboration should be the same for accomplices as injured females. The corroborating evidence should be considered in conjunction with the prostitute's testimony. Such as evidence must be consistent and harmonious with her testimony, and the corroborating evidence will then be adequate for the purposes of the statute if it dispels the assumed distrust of the prostitute's testimony, which in the first instance led to the corroboration requirement. In response, in 1978, the legislature repealed the statute that required corroboration, and they enacted the statute that we're talking about now. So it was a double whammy. No. The state of the law now is that corroboration is generally not required. Accomplice testimony is one of the exceptions. If the committee chooses to remove this language, we do believe it is archaic and outdated, but if the committee chooses to remove this language, we would want the record to be clear that the committee is not intending to revert back to the law the way it was when Johnson v. State was decided.
Thank you, Ms. Schroeder. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, I just want to be clear that I understand that really this language is duplicative because we changed this law and we don't require corroboration. So why, if we took out unnecessary language from the bill, would it imply that we were trying to revert back to the previous law?
Through the chair to Representative Gray, sometimes when the legislature makes changes to the law, the court thinks that the legislature intended to make a change. And so that's why we would want the record to be clear that the legislature is actually not intending to change the law. The legislature believes that the statute is duplicative and not needed anymore, which is why we would want the record to be clear.
Follow up. So that's good information for me to have. So when the court gets the bill, even though we would have deleted this language, they will see the original bill and know that we deleted it and could therefore try to make an assumption about what we were trying to do?
Through the chair to Representative Gray, this language is in statute now. If you remove it from the bill, it will be removed from statute as well. So it will no longer appear. And so the court could think that the legislature was trying to make a change there. I will admit that's a small risk. However, we would like the legislative history to be clear so that we, if somehow litigation comes up on this issue, that we can show the record and put this to bed.
Follow up. Is there any harm to just leaving it in then?
Through the chair to Representative Gray, there is no harm other than it draws a lot of questions and it can be a distraction.
It is also my understanding, Ms. Schroeder, that this particular statute has led to a lot of confusion because this isn't just applicable in this section of law. Is that correct?
Chair Vance, it would only be applicable to sex trafficking statutes the way it's drafted and the way it applies in current law. It is unusual, though, for something like this to be in statute. If the legislature wanted to clean it up and remove it, the Department of Law doesn't take issue with that. We just want to make sure the record is clear.
So I ask, what is the will of the committee? Representative.
Thank you. At present, I'm inclined to just leave it in for sake of clarity. And it does certainly lead to interesting questions about legislative history and court cases and such. But it seems like the least risk would be attached to simply leaving it as is.
Representative Groh.
I'm inclined to follow the legal advice on this with my understanding that there used to be some very archaic statements of law that had some very damaging stereotypes and extremely unfortunate backward views in the law. And I'm inclined to take legal advice, as I said, about the best way to proceed to make sure that we're not associated with those very archaic and unfortunate past views.
Any further considerations from the members about amendment number 2? Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, so I've been confused by the fellow representative's statement. Is it legal advice to remove it or not? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Gray, I think the Department of Law views this language as archaic and out of date. If the committee chooses to remove it, we would view that as a cleanup change, cleanup to the statutes, as long as the committee is clear that that's what they're doing. Obviously, if the committee chooses to leave it, you know, that's not a deal breaker either.
Representative Gray, this is why I propose this as a separate amendment to stand on its own because it is a consideration of the committee, but us having to make it very clear on the record what our intent is, and wanted to have an opportunity for us to discuss this and decide if we wanted to consider this a cleanup language and remove it with the clarity that it is not our intent to undo anything else in law. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair. So it sounds like when I hear your answer that legal isn't telling us to do one thing or the other. And so that means that if you say, well, I just want to do what legal wants us to do, well, legal hasn't told us what to do. So that doesn't give me a, I don't know what to do. Thank you.
Representative Gray, the opinion from the Department of Law is that it's archaic and therefore unnecessary, if I,
that's correct.
So, Representative Carpenter.
Madam Chair, thank you. Do we have an opinion from our own legislative legal on whether this is archaic or not, or what their perspective is, just so that we've got both branches on record?
One moment. Brief at ease. Back on record, we have been seeking to see if we can get other branches of government to give us their insight on this particular amendment, number two, corroboration of certain testimony not required. And I see that Ms. Nancy Mead is in the room. Would you be able to speak to amendment number two for the record?
For the record, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. I concur with Ms. Schroeder that having that provision in the law currently is confusing, at least. It is not necessary, and I would also view it as a cleanup change to remove that language. And I now think the record is quite clear that the intention is not to revert to requiring corroboration. And so I would have no problem if the committee excluded it, and I think it would be interpreted by the court in the way that this committee intends.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Mead? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. So if this amendment is passed, does this have the legal effect of placing this kind of testimony on par with every other kind of witness testimony? Or is there something special about this particular kind of witness testimony still?
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, there is nothing special about this kind of witness testimony. And without this provision, these sorts of cases would be just like any other case. The more witnesses you have saying something, I suppose, the stronger the evidence. But removing this would bring this more in line with every other type of criminal case.
Thank you.
Any further questions or comments about amendment number two?
I'm satisfied, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter.
For the record.
Is the objection on amendment number two maintained?
It's not.
Hearing no other objection, amendment number two has passed. Representative Carpenter.
Madam Chair, I move amendment number three, and that was court order 33-GH1029/S3.
Object for discussion.
Thank you. Ms. Schroeder, please walk us through the changes on amendment number three.
Again, S.3 does several things that are largely cleanup type of amendments. On page one of the amendment, lines one through two, that first part there deletes language on page seven talking about the prostitution offense. It deletes language whether the intended recipient is the person or someone else. That language was identified by legislative legal as being superfluous and not necessary, and the Department of Law tends to agree with that, or does agree with that. Page one of the amendment, lines four through six, deletes language from the forfeiture statute that was enacted, placed in the CS. On page 9, at the top of the page, that language is being deleted. So on page 9, 1 through 3, that language is being deleted. And that was at the request of the chair, I believe. Page 1 of the amendments, lines 9 through 11. This changes a reference to the military, one of the military justice statutes, and raises the age from 20 to 21. And I believe, again, that that was a request from the chair. Page 1 of the amendment, lines 13 and 14, adds sex trafficking to the Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault statutes, in which it adds sex trafficking for victim services and allows the victim services for sex trafficking to get grants. Page 1 of the amendment, lines 16 and 17, is deleting the applicability section related to the very first change that's made in the amendment. So we're deleting a subsection of one of the statutes, and the corresponding applicability section is also being deleted there on page 33, line 14, and deleting that material. And then the rest of the amendment corrects the applicability section as far as cross-references to sections.
Ms. Schroeder, any questions on amendment number 3? Representative Carpenter.
About page 6 of the amendment, line 8 of the amendment, referencing deletion of material on page 34.
To the chair, Representative Carpenter. Thank you. That is deleting the same language that was deleted in the prior amendment referring to prior court records.
Thank you.
Any further questions about amendment number 3? Representative Gray.
One moment, Madam Chair. I'm finding of the bill, page 9, the top 3, is that? Oh, yeah, so this is on from the amendment, page 1, lines 4 through 5, when we're deleting all the material that has to do with appropriating funds received from sale of property forfeited under this and then provided to as restitution to victims of sex trafficking. Why did we delete it?
Thank you, Representative Gray. This was at my request. There is another section that deals with property and resources going to victims of sex trafficking for those who have been convicted of sex trafficking. This one was for an offense with prostitution.
Oh, okay.
And it was a miscommunication of my intent with legislative legal, and so I felt that it wasn't necessary and decided to remove it. Any further questions on amendment number 3? Just for clarification on page 1 of the amendment, line 9, page 23, where I've upped the age from 20 to 21, that is to be consistent with the CS in to have the consistency as it moves through in relationship to last year when we passed the bill raising the age of missing persons from 18 to 21. I wanted to have that consistency. And then on line 13 of page 1 of the amendment, where we are inserting the word sex trafficking, that was an oversight missed that it for the council to distribute grants. We missed having victims of sex trafficking as being recipients and wanted to clean that up. So those were the just some of those little cleanup things that that we missed in that first CS because Legislative Legal was working as fast as they could to be able to get this stuff out. So that's why there are these series of cleanups. Representative Eastman.
Thank you. So if we make this change, what is the status of the council's relationship to sex trafficking? I know that was part of a larger conversation, I think.
Representative Eastman, I left the section for them to be able to handle the grants at this time, to be able to distribute for victims of sex trafficking, because Ms. Katie Tipas was mentioning that they, while the Governor's Council on Human and Sex Trafficking was bringing partnerships together, they did not have someone to be able to distribute grants, and felt that the council already had that structure in place. And in the CS, I prior removed the council from expanding their authority to include sex trafficking in hopes of having a conversation with the other body on where sex trafficking should fall in a council for the long run, but wasn't quite ready to remove the section for grants. I didn't want to stop that, the distribution of funds, until we have a further solution.
Thank you.
Any further questions on amendment number 3? Representative Eastman, is your objection for amendment number 3 maintained?
It is.
Okay. Would the recorder please tally? Please call the roll.
Representative Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Eastman.
No.
Representative Gray.
Yes.
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Yes. With a vote of 5 yeas and 1 nay, amendment number 3 has been adopted. Representative Carpenter.
Madam Chair, I move amendment number 4, work order 33-GH1029/S5.
Object for discussion.
Ms. Schroeder.
S.5 is a cleanup amendment requested by the Department of Law. In the CS, we had requested consolidating the list of factors that constitute inducing or causing. And those factors currently appear at the bottom of page 5. However, in our efforts to clean up the language, we inadvertently created a legal issue. We need those factors to be an element of the offense for human trafficking. They can continue to be descriptors for sex trafficking, but for human trafficking, they need to be an element of the offense. The reason being, the underlying conduct of human trafficking is not necessarily illegal. Therefore, it is how the person is induced or caused to engage in that conduct that is extremely relevant. That is the crux of human trafficking. It is important, but not as important for sex trafficking, because the underlying conduct the person's being induced or caused to engage in is criminal. And so that distinction needs to be maintained in statute. So basically we've asked, this amendment returns the factors as an element of the offense for human trafficking and as a descriptor for sex trafficking as it appeared in the original version of the bill.
Any questions on amendment number 4? Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, so it's describing, in this case, inducing or causing a person to engage in a commercial sex act. So I guess I just need it to be explained to me. I mean, I can understand that how all of these factors, all of these methods could be used for inducing someone to do work, not sex work, but other work that might not be illegal. But it just seems strange to me that we would need this. We would need it to appear here in the description of being induced to engage in a commercial sex act, if we were going to use it to talk about working on a farm. Or
through the chair to Representative Gray, this portion of the amendment on page 1 is making those factors apply to sex trafficking, and they are descriptor. They're further descriptor of what inducing or causing is, and that's consistent with how the bill was originally introduced. However, if you turn to page 2, that same list appears in the crime of human trafficking as an element of the offense. And so that's the distinction that's happening there in the amendment.
Thank you.
Any further questions on amendment number 4? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. I'm seeing several significant sections of deleted material, and I'm just wanting to make sure I understand what's going on there. For example, the material being deleted on page 3, lines 5 to 6 of the amendment.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that is deleting the consolidated list of factors because we've now separated them out and moved them.
Thank you. And the deleted material on page 33 of the bill.
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, that is a cross-reference that no longer exists because of the movement there.
Thank you.
Any further questions on amendment number 4? Representative Carpenter.
Just to be clear, Madam Chair, page 1 of the amendment, and the first portion here, page 2, line 6, is deleting one statute referenced here, 1141.355, and replacing it with 1141.357. I see that 355 was being created down below as a new section. I don't see that 357 is being created, or maybe I just haven't gotten to it or overlooked it.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, 357 is the statute that's, it is right below, and those numbers are adjusted throughout the amendment because we've gone from fewer sections to more sections now, so we need more space in the statutes.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. All right, so can we be very clear for the record? If someone's looking for 357, where do they go to find it in this bill?
Representative Eastman. It's on the amendment that hasn't been inserted into the CS yet.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And my apologies this has been a heavy bill. This has been a lot of technical things, and I just really admire Claire at Legislative Legal and Ms. Schroeder with the Department of Law for being able to just keep us moving through all of these changes and the conforming things that they have to do, because this is a lot of accuracy that we've been trying to get before we move this bill along. So I appreciate the attention to detail because it takes that. Any further questions on amendment number 4? Did I miss? Representative Eastman, is your objection maintained?
It is not.
Hearing no further objection, amendment number 4 has been adopted. So as I mentioned earlier, I have two other amendments that are policy amendments that I've been working on with Legislative Legal. And in full transparency, one of them is to add an educational piece to our schools. And I've been working with Stacy Yates of my house. And what the amendment would do is impact the section of law that already has provisions for schools to provide sexual assault and sexual awareness training for the educators and for the students. And what it would do was it would expand that to sex and human trafficking and also the online dangers that they are facing that we heard from Lieutenant Ryan Browning, very similar vein that is not only impacting trafficking, but also impacting our youth with sextortion that is often leading to suicide. So I've been trying to work through how that should all come together. And it is not an unfunded, I don't want to put another burden onto the schools, but the committee previously sent a curriculum that from Stacy Yates called Speak Up. And if that has not been sent to you, again, we can do that. So you can take a look at that. And it is a research-based, trauma-informed curriculum that I think would be very helpful. It is designed to not be an added burden to teachers, but train the trainer. So it is not something that I'm wanting to create a larger burden. But because we know that trafficking and the online grooming has just plagued our young people, I thought that it would be worthy of us putting this in the bill so that we are not only bringing the convictions for when the crime occurs, but also working on the prevention side at the same time. So as soon as I have that language for you, I will send that to you, but I'd like for you to consider that as an aspect that we can empower our young people and our educators on that. I invite you to, you know, ask further questions, and I know that Stacey Yates will make herself available for more details on that. The second policy amendment that I'm working through that Vice Chair Allard mentioned that she wants, and I have one section of the bill that has already included that, is revoking professional licenses upon the conviction of sex trafficking. And this is a much larger policy discussion that I would like for us to have. And I believe that we could start that conversation right now because we have a little bit of time left in the committee today. I would like your insight on it. I went through the list of general professional licenses and looked at people who are in the trusted positions on a personal nature, physicians, counselors. We already included teachers. And I want to know the will of the committee if we feel that it would be appropriate to revoke their license for life upon the conviction of sex trafficking. Taking the serious nature of trafficking people into account and wanting to know the will of the committee before we move further on that. Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the question of removing someone's opportunity to continue in a particular career field and for the purpose of their livelihood, if it's appropriate to remove that option, then it might also be appropriate to make sure that the sentence for the offense, if it's truly that egregious, basically accounts for the amount of time that they would be out on the street working in society. So in other words, if we're going to say that they can no longer continue in their career field, it would probably match a very long prison sentence. Otherwise, we're simply creating, in essence, you know, multiple tiers of citizenship. You have people who are in society who can, you know, work above the table on a chosen career field, and others who are saying you can't legally work in that career field, which is a policy call, but it pushes them in the direction of working illegally in various career fields, and I don't know that we all want to be doing that.
Any further insight? Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we brought it up last time that you know, when you renew your professional license, most professional licenses ask if you've been convicted of a felony. And when you click yes, then you have to explain. So I think I'd want to know if this would be duplicative, because I feel like if you're convicted of sex trafficking and you try to renew your license, that you probably won't. But I don't know that for sure, so I'd like that to be, you know, verified. I will say that when I was working at a hospital in California, we did have a physician there who was convicted of a crime like this, but they went to prison. So you know what I mean? Like they certainly weren't working from prison. So so kind of tying in with Representative Eastman's questions that when you're convicted, in this case, he was convicted of multiple felonies and went to prison. I feel like it might be sort of a statement that we're making, but I'm not sure how much it would actually change what happens to somebody when they're convicted of a crime like this.
Representative Gray, to answer your other question about do they have to check the box, that was one of the questions that the drafter asked in the first rendition of the amendment, was Not all of the boards require that. And is that something that we would want to be required? So we have options on the policy direction if we feel that it's too harsh to revoke their license for life upon conviction. We could at minimum require these convictions to be notified with the board so that that professional board could then consider, is it worth renewing their license? But this is a very large policy call that I think is worthy of deliberation before I decide to go one way or the other, and I appreciate everyone's insight. Is there further? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm hesitant to speculate on something that's not before me. And to the extent that we might be asking our drafters to draft something that we don't ultimately end up making part of law or passing as legislation, I think that's part of the process. So I would rather just support the desire to bring a recommendation forward that's actually before us in an amendment or a bill and have the conversation rather than wax philosophical without having something in front of me.
My apologies, Representative Carpenter. The reason that you don't have that before you today is because there is an amendment drafted to revoke the licenses for life upon conviction of sex trafficking, but there was a further question of regarding the notification of convictions to the boards and commissions and didn't feel that the amendment would have been complete at this time. So without causing our drafter to do more work that may not be fruitful, I wanted to get some insight on the direction, the will of the committee.
I guess I would just like to follow up and say that if it's worth asking the question now, it's worth asking them to draft it so that we can communicate on it with it sitting in front of us.
Okay. Representative Carpenter, Eastman.
Thank you. And I agree in large part with what Representative Carpenter is saying. And I guess my overriding concern is as we're going through, you know, potentially working on additional amendments or CS or so forth, is that to the maximum extent possible, I would like to see, and this is just one bill, I think this is true for all of the criminal bills we deal with, I would like to see a clear line of demarcation. When someone has paid their debt to society, I would like them to be able to enjoy to the maximum extent possible the freedoms of being an Alaska resident. And I understand that that can't always be the case, but that's my overarching concern, is that we find out how you pay your debt to society, we make sure that the crime meets, you know, the time and whatever else goes along with that, and then we encourage someone to then become a productive member of society rather than pushing them in the opposite direction of becoming a permanent criminal, which I don't think is going to help anyone.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm just putting this out there that I think about a pathologist, for example, a doctor who's a pathologist who looks at slides of tissue and gives diagnoses. That doctor maybe doesn't interact with people. So that might be a case where, you know what I mean? Like if the goal is to make sure that they can't interact with people or perhaps use their position to engage in sex trafficking or the crime that they've been convicted of, there might be, I could think of nurses who do audits of healthcare facilities in such a way where they're really doing administrative tasks, that there might be cases where people have this license and use it for their profession, but don't actually, and I get it, it may be very small, but I think about that there could be some exceptions to the rule where, you know, I don't want to seem like I'm like trying to find ways around it, but I'm just wondering, and that's where I feel like the case where that checking that box and saying that you're convicted of a felony and then explaining what the felony is, perhaps the person issuing the license would be like, well, this is a pathologist who just looks at slides all day. It's probably okay. As opposed to somebody working in primary care and seeing 30 patients a day. Maybe we don't want that person doing that job. there might be some judgment that the professional board could make that's outside of us making a blanket statement that no one who has any of these licenses can ever have these licenses again.
Thank you, Representative Gray, and I appreciate the conversation from committee members. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It would be my opinion that if someone has done something so egregious to lose their license for life, they ought to get it when they die, when they take them out of prison. So if it's serious enough crime that they lose it, they need to be locked away for a long, long time. So, you know, I can see where there'd be instances of certain paroles, but I hate to see a bus driver who was found guilty of something lose his ability for a CDL. I don't know how far we're taking this down. So he can't drive a gravel truck where he has no contact with anyone. So there's a balance in there on the severity of the crime for me. So, you know, I think that we need to look at it. I kind of agree with, we need to start looking at the details more than the philosophy. So I kind of agree with Representative Carpenter.
Well, and I appreciate the conversation because this gives me further direction for the drafter. Otherwise, I would definitely have something before you. So I appreciate that. And we'll have something concrete for deliberation on Friday with the intent to move this bill. So that concludes our business for today. The House Judiciary Committee will meet again on Friday, April 19th at 1 p.m. to bring back House Bill 68 and also House Bill 11, Crime, Assault in the Presence of a Child by Representative Josephson. And we will have an amendment deadline for Thursday at 5 p.m. Friday at 5 p.m. on House Bill 11. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. It is 5:06 p.m.